Today we're going to attempt to finish off dealing with this first part of the instruction that we've been getting in as far as our godly thinking is concerned. Here in Romans chapter 13, verses 8 through 14, all deal with the instruction that we would have as sons to receive the third of four great skill sets to be able to make decisions like our Father does. And that has to do with godly judgment, and especially in verses 11 through 14, judgment in connection with time and how we use and how we spend it. And there's a great deal that needs to be made, that has to have a deep impression made upon you so that these things really do effectually do their job in face of what we're going to be entering into here very, very shortly. And once you've gone through the first initial component of instruction of judgment that deals with your neighbor and deals with how you're going to make judgments in connection with all men in general, and especially those who are near you, then you're going to have to immediately have this attached to it, because you don't have, in a sense, I'm not going to say it that way. It's not the best way to say it. You have a demand, a priority demand upon your time that makes it so that you're not just going to be very flippant in the way in which you utilize your time and what you're going to do with others, even though those things may be of great benefit. Your time has got some constraints upon it because of the environment that you're in. And so this needs to immediately be attached to that, and it has to do with how you use your time, making the wisest, and that's what you're dealing with here. You're dealing with judgments between wise, wiser, wisest, good, better, best use of your time, and that's something that should be really pressing upon you at this moment in your sonship education, because this information, little as it is, gets your head up, so to speak, and gets your eyes looking ahead to what all is still laying out in front of you. And you realize that your Father now is going to call, I'm going to use that expression, he's going to call or invite you to another aspect of his business. Actually, he's going to promote you. You're going to be promoted into another aspect of his business, which should be a thrill for you as a son and a daughter to have arrived at this point, because it means that you've demonstrated a certain amount of capacity and a certain amount of ability. Now, that's something that you need to be honest with yourself about, that you're there, that you have that, that that is demonstrated, that where we are as an assembly is where you are with us as an assembly. And if not, then there's some more work that you're going to have to do, that you can go back and everything is recorded. You can go back and get it, or you can get it in written form. Some people find that reading through the material can be more rapid than listening to it. But nevertheless, that's the expectation of a father at this point. This is a passage, by the way, that can easily be lifted out of the context of Romans here and made great sermons about. Time and waking out of sleep and all this kind of business. And, you know, this is a passage that is often too, I don't know, some of you have probably never been to one before, and that's fine. I'm not telling you to go. But this is where a lot of revivalists get their text from, you know, that they'll throw this one in for good measure, you know, because they want to get as many people coming up front at the end of the thing as possible. I remember one guy talking about that this poor guy who was coming up for about the 13th time to get saved. He came up so fast, he was running up the sawdust trail, and he wanted to leap up onto the pulpit. And there was a fence type thing there, and he got his foot caught on it, and he fell and just kept rolling and rolled clear into the choir and everything that they had up there. And always have a dais of important pastors sitting up here behind you, and they all jumped on the guy to try to help him up, and the preacher didn't miss a beat. And he said, "No, no, no," he said, "leave him where Jesus flang him." And but they talk about, you know, at these revivals that you need to wake up, that the great awakening, and that the church needs to wake up and all of that's not what this is talking about. And so it's again a passage that can be highly abused and taken out of its context, And that context keeps the restraints on it where it needs to be. But it is, for a son, one of the greatest, I'm going to use the expression, funnest. It's one of the most delightful, joyful moments so far in his sonship education, to think that his father would look at him and say, you know what, you do have the capacity, you do have the ability, and I want you now to spend more time with me, and I'm going to open a door of opportunity for you that is going to open up things that your mind hasn't even dealt with yet. And it really is the door that, if you go through this door, is going to be lead to the rest of your entire sonship education. And that's really what this is. It's a momentous time. And so the father comes along here and talks to his son in ways that are very short, but they are very powerful in far as what it's going to take to renew his mind. And that renewing of our mind, the godly thinking, as you see, takes place there in verse 11 and 12a. All of verse 11 is dealing with one issue of time. I say that generally. There's a transition that takes place in the second clause, but the first clause of verse 12, the night is far spent, the day is at hand, deals with another aspect of time. There's actually two different aspects of time being dealt with in the godly thinking, and your thinking needs to be renewed in this particular case. So there's a great deal of work that needs to be done. The first aspect of time, as you know, is dealing with personal time. That's what verse 11 is dealing with. And then dispensational time, or the timing of this dispensation of grace, is what we'll focus on in verse 12a. And we need to really nail down those very simple words: the night is far spent, the day is at hand. But in our personal time, verse 11 has got two major clauses to it. So it's got two main parts to it. And part one is that first clause, and that knowing the time, and that now it is high time to awake out of sleep. And I hope to finish that one today. And if we need to tie up loose ends, we will. But on Wednesday night, we'll begin dealing with part two. For now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. And again, you have to understand what salvation that's talking about. And there's a particular place that's taking your thinking. And there's a reason all of these words are so carefully chosen. God doesn't just have Paul come along and say, well, you know, the end of the dispensation of grace is nearer than when we started. And it's not the way he says it. He says, now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. And there's an important aspect that we'll take there. But in this first part, it has these three steps. And I've asked you on several occasions to go over this. And you have, and you've demonstrated to me that you know that. And I don't know if it's because of the way I feel or what, but I'm going to cut some of this out. If we have a little longer break, we'll have a little longer break. But, and that, once again, this has got to immediately be attached to the previous information. And each one of these little phrases puts your thinking in the position for God to be able to come along and give you this saying. And so he immediately wants you to think about the immediacy of putting this together with what you've just learned about judgment and making judgments in connection with all men in general, and utilizing that first saying that you were given there, that love worketh no ill to his, and that's the principle, but the saying of thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, and then love working no ill toward his neighbor. But he immediately says, and that, knowing the time. And we spent a lot of time on that because this is sonship time. A son knows time and understands time different than anybody else on the face of this earth. He understands everybody has different ideas of time and how to spend their time, but a son knows what time it is. He knows what time he's on, and he understands and appreciates that he's in a particular kind of an environment that is time demanding. And that's fine. It's like any kind of training that you're in, vocational training or education that you're in. You can't spend your time on certain endeavors that would impede your progress, that would slow things down, that would cause problems to your continuing on in being conformed in this course that you and I are studying. It has a predestined end. You understand that. Our end is predestined. And I'm saying that with full knowledge that I am not a Calvinist. I'm not saying you are predestined. I'm saying the end of this education is predestined. If you, it's like, it's not the who, it's the what. If you go in through the front door and you go through the entire thing, when you exit the back door at the end of it, every one of us are going to be the same as far as what it's destined to do to us, and that is conform each one of us into the image of Christ. That's a big deal, by the way. You do realize that no other religion comes along, like the Muslims don't come along and say, if you go through the Quran, you will be conformed in the image of Allah. That's foreign to them. No, the whole idea is that Allah is a God that's so big, so powerful, you can never hope to have anything more than with a relationship with Him than being a slave, a creature to a creator. And there's no other religion. You can't find that going through a certain set of holy scriptures is going to take some people in some religions, for instance, and conform them to the image of Buddha. Who in the world would want to be conformed into that fat little tubby thing anyway? But to think for, I mean, just that issue alone ought to make your day. That we're here in Bible class with one more increment of getting conformed in the image of Jesus Christ. That's mind-blowing. So that's what occupies our time and our mind, that we have this fantastic business with our Father that has to do with the creature and has to do with the heavenly realm and all of these kinds of things. So our time is critical to us, and we know what time it is. And that knowing the time, and now we've been dealing with this third step, which is it is high time to awake out of sleep. Those first two steps have got you to that third step, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep. And I don't know if you caught up, I'm sure some of you did, but if you didn't, you need to, on Wednesday night's class, because it was very critical. And there were things that we went over there that were very important to this issue of being, of that it is high time to awake out of sleep. And the high time issue, of course, for us is not an issue, just like it was with the Romans, of coming along and reproving them or reprimanding them. That's not what this is. The context will not allow that. It is high time to get going. Actually, it can be used before any kind of wrongdoing or forgetfulness or laziness or those kinds of things has actually occurred. And so it's just a simple way of the Father coming along and saying, now son, you knew there was going to come a time where I was going to demand more time. Well, the time's arrived. It's high time to wake out of sleep. And what you've been doing and the time you've been giving to this is not going to be enough anymore if we're going to get accomplished everything that I want to get accomplished with you as my son and as my daughter in my business. So this is the place, this is the time, this is the moment that you've been waiting for. I'm asking you, you've demonstrated ability and capacity, now I'm asking you to come to work with me in some more of my business and some business aspects that get really, really enjoyable, interesting, because we're going to be dealing with aspects not only of the grandeur of our Father's business, but also getting to meet His business adversary and His policy of evil. And that has us looking at our future aspects and future opportunities and realizing some alterations are going to have to be made to our time. Judgments are going to have to be made. Priorities are going to have to be rethought through. And what we did on Wednesday night was important because we spent a great deal of time talking about when we deal with wasting time, missing out on time, we just don't know how much time we've got left. This is the now aspect of now it is high time. And the next one that comes up, for now is our salvation nearer than when we just believed. And we have to realize that this is based upon an awareness that is supposed to take place in you, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep. and you now realize that you've got some capacity, you know what time it is, and you don't want to get caught not having time necessary to be able to take this increased workload. That's what you're facing now at this point. Your father's going to increase your workload. You saw that happen back in Genesis chapter 2 there with Adam. God increased his workload. There was the first order of his business. He did it himself without any help of any kind. He went through all the animals. It was a daunting job, but he did it. And he didn't take a break, didn't take a coffee break, didn't need a union to get it done. I don't know if I care that much for Harry Truman, but I do like what he said when he said, God created this earth in 6 days, but it was surely before labor unions. Well, he was able to do all of that, and then he understood and it kind of got his eyes up to the next order of the Father's business and realized he had to have help to get that done. And that's why he needed a helpmate. Well, now we're going to have an increase of the workload for you and I that's going to be given to us, and more time is going to have to be spent in the Father's business. And what we did on Wednesday, just again to remind you of that, is I talked a lot there about how personal of a matter this is. Because when you talk about personal time, you're talking about privacy issues. And I'm at this point in teaching you as a father and not as an instructor in Christ, where I'm not going to tell you what to do. And trying to read you sometimes is like trying to play poker with, you know, world champion poker players, because I don't know from your face. Like I said on Wednesday night, it seems like some of the things I say just hit you in the forehead and bounce on the floor. But obviously, from what you told me Wednesday night, that's not the case, because you were bang on in our interactivity that we had on Wednesday night. It was very, very good, and it was very satisfying to me that we're in a good place. But for those who weren't here, I'm not going to tell you the details of this. You've got your own life, and you're going to have your own situations and circumstances where you're going to have to go through your own life, and you're going to have to look at it with some priority in view as to what's going on. But every class that we have gets more and more critical as we go on. And it's not just a message to try to get people to Bible class. That should have been settled long ago. But one of the things that we talked about was how this manifests itself, so to speak, and how spending more time in the Father's business, what that means to you personally, what it means to know the time, that it is high time to wake out of sleep and to get the main operating principles that are going to come out of that, that's going to make a difference in the way life was before Romans 13:11 and after Romans 13:11, because there should be a difference. If there isn't any, I'm not sure if this has worked, but there should be some difference. And so I kind of probed you as far as really understanding how, when it comes to the way in which this shows up in your life and makes an impact in your life in view of spending more time, what are you going to be spending more time doing? Where's this time going to be used? How does this show up in my life? And all of you had great feedback on that, and your comments were really good, and I just want to hit the highlights of that, and then we'll move on to finish this out. But it is a little repetitive for those who are here on Wednesday night. But as I said before, this curriculum is designed to really invade your life. It's designed to move into every corner and nook and cranny and area of your life. And I mean that it's invasive in a very good and positive sense. It needs to invade. One of the things I don't think you quite appreciate yet is just how affected you've been by this world and the policy of evil of this world. And I know it's sometimes you sit there and think, well, I don't think I've been all... but you've been conditioned by it in deep inroads that you may not even be aware of. Heavens, look at what happened. Did you see the other day they had, I guess it was the military. The military's invented a new robot. Anybody see the new robot the military invented? It's a pretty cool looking thing, and they had it walking on rocks. Soldiers have to walk on rocks, you know. And they were talking about how difficult this has been. Just that, just to get a robot to walk on rocks, has taken about every brain that we have at MIT and all the other places and NASA trying to figure out how in the world we do things without even thinking about it. But nobody saw that. All right? Do you remember what they named it? I didn't even think about it, but Cindy heard it, and she goes, there it is again. They named it Atlas. You say, well, so? Yeah, I know. And I'm not saying that that robot is like satanically indwelt or something. But what I am pointing out is Atlas is a pagan god. And it's so, we're so conditioned that we just name a robot after a false pagan god. And again, I'm not saying that the people who did that are full of Satan and all of this kind of business. I'm saying that's how conditioned we are. That when we want to attribute superhuman things, you know, they didn't come along and name it the Apostle Paul. They named it after a pagan god. It's the conditioning. And this, again, this is what has to, we have to kind of get confronted with, and some of the things we're going to deal with when we get a little bit later on in here, of just how deep that conditioning has gone. But one of the ways, I had several ways in which this is going to show up, where you're going to be spending more time, and what you're going to be spending your time on doing, and I can only be very vague in general, and I won't get more specific because I'm not going to cross the line of becoming your tutor and your governor. But there are some things about the details of your life that this goes into that you're going to start realizing more and more of those details can be utilized for godly training as a son, for your vocational training in the heavenly realm. And you realize that you're more and more, it's like I said on Wednesday, we have, I know you don't like to think about yourself this way, and I'm not saying this in a clinically bad way, but in many ways we are multiple personalities. In many ways we do have multiple lives. You know, people's, you know, a wife finds out that her husband's been stepping out, and the family all says, well, it's like he had a double life. Welcome to reality. Most of us have double lives, triple lives, quadruple lives. We just don't think about it oftentimes, but we think about our church life, our work life, our home life, our patriotic life, our this life, that life. If you really start to think about it, you got a whole bunch of lives. And what sonship starts doing is it starts taking all those lives and jettisoning them and saying, you've really got just one. And it's this life, and all these other lives that you've got have value. There's some real value to these things for your training. And you realize, hey, wait a minute, this information can be used in my home life. This information can be used in my business life. This information can be used in my recreational life. This information invades all those are details of your life that now more and more time can be spent dealing with them in eternal, with eternal consequences to them. And so you don't want to do what so many Christians do, disengage from your Christian life and leave it at church and engage in whatever your secular life is. But there's real training here. And so those are, it's like I said on Wednesday, you find yourself more and more being on call all the time as a son, as a daughter, or on duty, as I like to oftentimes say. And so there's going to be more work, more judgments, more thinking and pondering. And these sayings are going to have to be dealt with in more and more circumstances and situations of your life as you start milking them and they start yielding their benefits and you work them and work them and work them. And so as you progress in your sonship education, by having to, by virtue of the fact that you've got sitting right there in verse 8 or 9, a saying, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. If you leave that saying in that verse for the rest of your life and you just go on and never come back to that, never work that, you didn't get that saying right. Right now, that saying has yielded for you maybe two or three drops. But that saying is designed to be worked for the rest of your life. Worked and worked and worked. And by the time we get to 10, 15 years from now, that saying should have gallons and gallons and gallons that it has yielded. And so will this one. And so will the next one. And the next one after that. And the next one after that. In other words, if your father keeps giving you these sayings, he's just building more and more and more work for you. And that's a good thing. That's for you to work on those things. Those are designed to fit particular circumstances and situations of your life. So if that's the case, and that's a part of the Bible, guess what you're going to be spending more time in? The Bible. And like we said on Wednesday, one of the things that you're going to spend more time in is study. And I'm not talking about you doing my job and having to study out 1st, 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and on and on and on. You can read through that, and that's great. You should be. And you can study some things out there if you want to. But the real study I'm after is having to deal with what you're taught, going back and making more connections with some things that are sitting back in God's Word, not only in Romans, but even before the book of Romans, and study some things out. Coming up in the next few Bible classes, as we get underway with more and more of this particular section, we're going to have to go back and look at some things, but even when we look at those things, I will tell you that you can study some of these things out on your own. I'll take you to a certain point, but then you can take it from there and study some things out on your own. There's some things you need to appreciate, for instance, about Israel's program that has to do with us. You say, no, wait a minute, we're not in Israel's program. I know that. But if we go ahead on that timeline chart, there's going to come a time when our program of the Church, the Body of Christ, and this mystery, and Israel's program are going to join together. And there's a lot of grace folks that get it in their head that the twain shall never meet, but they will meet. And in fact, there's some things that have us in view or some things that we need to appreciate about what we're going to be doing as soon as this dispensation of grace ends while God's program with Israel is continuing on this earth. There's some things we're going to be doing in preparation for that coming time. So there's some fantastic things that we're going to be looking at. But we can only go so far with them. My understanding isn't where I want it to be. But there's some study that you're going to have to do. And your sonship education, as it moves on, is going to have you giving more time to study. And if study is the case, then also learning is the case. And there's some learning that you're going to have to be involved in, and it's going to require some more time. And again, I sound like a broken record, but if you're going to make judgments, you're going to have to make a judgment concerning how to make some material alterations in the way in which you do things to acquire more time in study. And if study, learning is all going on, then that third natural component of sonship prayer is also going to be demanding more time. And so you're going to have time given to study, learning. The learning part of it's ensuring that what you studied is really doing its job, effectually working in you and through you. It's to work out through you because you've got labor aspects of it. But that means that more time also is going to be given over to sonship prayer, just simple communion and fellowship with your Father And there should be an increased time that you want to spend with your father in prayer, because you're going to be spending more time in his business operations. So there's some things you need to really get straightened out between you and him. And that's where I draw the line. I'm not going to get into to what all that is. Well, anyway, that's very briefly some of the things we talked about on Wednesday night that gives maybe a little bit more clarity to the kind of time we're after here. When Paul says, and that knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep. And the last thing we need to look at here this morning is this sleep issue, because we need to kind of nail down what kind of sleep he's talking about. So when he says, now it is high time to awake out of sleep, well, first of all, my understanding is that this isn't talking about actual physical sleep. Now, I said that, and I thought about that, and I thought, well, it could be. When I said actual physical sleep, I meant you sleeping in here. That's what I was thinking about, which happens from time to time. And I know you're tired. And I know that you come in here after long days, I know it's tough out there. But the reason I kind of redacted that a little bit, and I thought, well, you know, it could be physical sleep, because maybe you actually do need to get up earlier in the morning, or not go to bed as late or early or whatever. I don't know. But in this particular context, the Romans weren't having that kind of a problem as far as physical sleep was concerned. So I'm going to let it stand that way for now, even though I know it could have some application to physical sleep. But my understanding is this isn't talking about physical sleep, because for one thing, that wasn't what was taking place with the Roman saints. And for another thing, this is actually functioning as a saying. You have these two now expressions in verse 11, that now it is high time to wake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. Those are sayings. I'm not saying every time you come across the word now, you got to sing, but it just so happens that's the way it is in this verse. But that saying should now be added to that saying that you had. The first one you had is so easy, because you probably knew that before you even read it. You've heard that 1,000 times. Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. You probably had people say it to you when you were mean to them. I have. You say, well, speak for yourself. I am. I won't go into detail. But this now needs to be added to that saying. But this one is pretty recognizable. It's high time to wake out of sleep. The next one, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. That one isn't quite as common. Now it is high time to wake out of sleep. This is functioning as a saying, and we'll get back to that in a little bit. But simply put, in view of the context, and that's what restrains everything. Everything is governed. Every word is governed by the context. And in view of the context in which this sits, the kind of sleep this is talking about, just to illustrate it this way, your father isn't coming along and saying, you know, well, in an illustrative way, he may be saying, you're in bed too long, you need to get up because we're going to spend more time. I've used that illustration. But my point is, the son isn't wrong for sleeping. It's just now high time to wake out of sleep, because we've got another aspect of business we need to start getting into. So if you can stop thinking for a moment about the physical sleep part of it being wrong, but you could even use that as an illustration. What are you doing? What are you not doing? This is the easier way to do it. What are you not doing when you're sleeping? Not thinking and not getting anything done. That's right. But let's put it in one word. Laboring. You're right. And that's one word, and you're right. But it wasn't my word. But you're right. You don't need my word for this. That works perfectly. But if you're sleeping, you're not working. And that's the simple matter. It's high time to wake out of sleep. The sleep issue here is, let me use this illustration, just illustrate it this way. It's the amount of time that you give yourself to rest and relaxation. And when you first start out as your father's son, it's kind of like when you first start out in many things. The actual amount of time, this is one of the things you see in university, the actual amount of time spent on your major is very small. You've got a lot of other things that you're doing. And as you finally hit your junior year, then all of a sudden the real focus of attention becomes on your major. Well, it's kind of like for a son, it was kind of like when I was a little boy and my dad would have me work with him in his wood shop. I would only work in there for a few hours a day. And then as I got a little older and I could do more than just sand pieces of chairs, then I got to do a little bit more and spend more time in there. And pretty soon, it was a garage that had a heater in it. And in the winter time, our garage door would freeze shut. Very common thing in Indiana. And Dad would always know when it was time to bust that door open and open it up, because the oxygen, that thing would eat the oxygen. It was a big heater, and it would just eat the oxygen up in that garage. And when Tim and I would start passing out, Dad would then open the door up, and he'd say, okay, well, now it's time to... Well, the boys are falling on the floor, so we better open the door up. There wasn't any OSHA involved in that little business of his, and the government wasn't involved in it at all. You know, child labor laws. But it was a fun time. Well, when we would be away from there, it was all fun and games. And the issue was, there comes a time where you're going to put more work and less fun and games. Now, I'm using that as an illustration, like giving yourself rest and relaxation. But all I'm really after, and I'm not after that, I'm not after you. I don't want you to go away thinking, well, we're just not supposed to have any fun. This whole thing is fun. I'm using that rest and relaxation as an illustration. What I'm really after is the sleep is the amount of time you spend away from work. That's the sleep. If you're honest with yourself, you can honestly look at your life and evaluate whether or not you do think in terms of, well, Sunday morning and most of Sunday morning is my time for my Christian life. And as soon as the pastor says amen, then I go out the door, and the rest of the week is the time for my life. So here we're back at our lives again, the days of your lives. And it's my Christian life, my secular life. Well, that's what you've got to honestly evaluate, because that's not going to be the way it is anymore. And that's going to have some real adjustments made to it. And please don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that there aren't proper times for rest and relaxation, or that you should say, oh, well, if I was really a son, then I should never, ever go on vacation. I'm using that as an illustration. I'm not saying don't go on vacation. Even Jesus did that. There are times, proper times, for rest and relaxation. I'm not saying there aren't. But what I am saying is this. You're going to find that even that has got... You don't... This is one of the things this is leading to. But put ye on the Lord Jesus Christ. He never tells you to take him off. And that's what I'm saying, that even when you are resting and relaxing. We, even like me, when I'm in the Shenandoah Valley, my own personal playground up there, it seems like. But there's value even in that time. You're never off duty. There are some occupations where you just say, you know, I never take the mantle of responsibility off. This is one of them. You're never at a time where you stand down from being a son, even in times of rest, even in times of play, even in times of relaxation. Even those times can have benefit to them and training benefit to them and can be utilized for our vocational training as a son. Simply put, and that's a matter of opinion, but simply put, in a context such as this, the sleep not being physical sleep, and the sleep not being any, the context won't allow it to be dealing with wrongdoing, such as, hey son, whack, wake up. You know, like you're asleep at the switch or asleep at the wheel or sleeping while doing your job. That's not this at all. There's no wrongdoing. The sleep is not being actually asleep in class, but in a context where what this saying is doing, where your Heavenly Father is coming along and he's exhorting you with this saying as his son, who is and has been, listen carefully, responding positively and properly to everything you've been taught. That saying is said to a son who is properly responding to everything he's been taught and positively responding to it. He's not doing anything wrong at this point. So, and I'm stressing that because the context is one in which no wrongdoing is going on. That means the kind of sleep has a very narrow focus. The kind of sleep or sleep time that perfectly fits and is fitting to this context, simply put, is the amount of time you spend away from work. That is, away from engaging in your Father's business. Heavens, folks, we've already had one of the components of wisdom, the understanding that we can take what we've been learning right outside and use it in our workaday, everyday life. And that was the beginning of getting the ball rolling, that more and more that my life is composed of this life, that life, the other life, this other life. And now you're beginning to realize all of these lives that I have, my work life, my family life, my secular life, my home life, my fun life, my this life, my that life, my Christian life, my church life, all of that is being brought now under one umbrella and saying all of that has got benefit. It needs to have some restructuring. It needs to have some alterations. It needs to have a prioritization that is fitting with what I'm being taught and trained by my Heavenly Father. But the amount of time that I spend away from the work of my Father's business is going to get less, and the time I spend working in my Father's business is going to increase. It's just that simple. And sleepy time, the time spent doing other things with your other lives, or your other life, is going to have to be restructured, if you will, and some decisions, some judgments are going to have to be made in order to make some alterations in your personal time in order to accommodate more time being spent and utilized for your Father's business operations. Now, I know that, again, sounds like it hit you in the head and fell on the floor, but that should be a woohoo moment. One of those times where you say, oh yeah, this is what I've been waiting for. Yippee! I always thought, everyone, well, old Keith would like to try to do something like, he'd say, yippee! This should not be a, oh no, moment. This is what you should have been waiting for. This is the time and this is the place. Now it is high time to wake out of sleep. Yes. More and more of my life is going to now be more and more of my Father's business. I'm going to be spending more time having to ponder and think and work these sayings, spending more time in God's Word, spending more time in ensuring that it's doing its effectual job, making sure that it's invading my life the way it's supposed to be invading it, and making sure that I'm gaining the greatest benefit out of it, that my image is becoming more and more like my Father's own Son, and driving me to spend more time with my Father in some real intelligent communication and communion and fellowship and sonship prayer. Well, when you take all three of these phrases of the first clause of part one here, all three of those, that deals with godly sonship judgment in connection with our personal time, we have them all working now and hitting on all cylinders when he says, and that, knowing the time, that now it is high time to wake out of sleep. And that final phrase, that now, which is in that saying, once again, that now, you have that increased ability and capacity and skill sets that you've acquired at this point in your godly sonship education. And now, right now, it's just like training and training and training for battle. And there comes the moment in which you step onto the battlefield. And though I've never been in real combat or battle, but like in there's movies that depict that, but there comes a time where a soldier, sailor, marine, or whoever it is, actually puts his foot on the field of battle, and he's there. He's no longer at Fort so-and-so or base so-and-so, but he's on the field of battle. This is the time. This is when your toe first touches the battlefield. Or in a sports analogy, when all the training that you've done and you finally actually get out on the field for the first time. You're no longer sitting in the dugout, but you finally cross that. Of course, I spent all my time in foul territory. But you cross that line and you finally step onto the field. For those of you who don't know it, a catcher is the only guy on the baseball team that plays in foul territory. But anyway. But it's a momentous time. The training is, and I'm not saying you're fully trained. I'm saying you're trained enough to begin to engage in a tremendous aspect of your Father's business that should be very exciting to you. And were I not feeling the way I'm feeling, I'd show you how exciting it is to me. But I can't do a lot of woo-woos with my throat this morning. But that's arrived. It's now. That now, right now, is the time and the place to move out into an increased workload, increased responsibility, increased capacity to become more and more involved in your Father's business than ever before. That now it is high time. I'm like, it is high time. You can almost say the year, the month, the week, the day, the hour, the minute, even the very second that you've been long awaiting has finally arrived. That's the thrill of it is high time. That now it is high time. The second has arrived. High time, by the way, in an expression like that saying, I don't know if I said this before, high time is a certain, definite, fixed time. Your Father had this time fixed. It's fixed in the curriculum. He wrote it down into the curriculum. We're going to go through this and then this and then this, and here it's high time. And promotion is right here. It's fixed. That expression, it's high time, is looking at a certain definite fixed time in a son's education when advancement and promotion in the Father's business is now going to be offered. And that's what's happening. Your Father is offering you to spend more time with Him and in His business. And it's here, right now, to awake out of sleep, to make less or lessen the sleep. And and the time spent away from the Father's work and business, and to make more or increase the waking moments or the time spent at work with the Father in His business. That's your saying. That now it is high time to awake out of sleep, and that's keeping everything within its context. Now, as I said before, this third phrase, that now it is high time to wake out of sleep, is functioning as a saying. And a saying, just to remind ourselves, a sonship saying. This isn't just some cutesy little expression that is used for a t-shirt or a ball cap or a bumper sticker or some refrigerator door magnet. This is a very powerful thing to a son. This is a catalyst. And a sonship saying, when God composes it, is a briefly stated body of information that by what it says is designed to so work with all you have been taught, and it doesn't lose any of it. It takes into consideration every detail that you've been taught in order to produce one or more main operating principles, which in turn provides you the capacity for keen, sharp, critical insight and perception and sound godly guidance. This is where you're not set adrift. Where it comes to others, you have this saying, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. And there's an awful lot that goes into that saying. We had to arrest it and drag it out of the world's use of it and get it back to the way God understood it. And a main operating principle came out of it. Love worketh no ill to his neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfilling of the law. Well, this is a saying, and it's going to have one or more main operating principles, but that's your guidance system that gives you sound godly guidance in making judgmental decisions that are complex and that demand pondering of the many issues and factors involved in your decision, and will continue operational both now and for the remainder of your sonship education. So that's your little review of a sonship saying. All right, before we end this class, this session, let's come back here. Well, let's come back here again. Okay, we've got a saying. Now it is high time to wake out of sleep. So what are the main operating principles? We'll stop right there and take a break. You can think about that. But there's some main operating principles that come out of that saying. And they're not given to you like they were given to you before. But actually, I think all of them, at some time or another, we've talked about. So we'll stop right there and we'll come back right after the break and make sure we get these operating principles down. And then mention one other thing in connection with this before we leave and move on to part two. So we'll stop it right there and we'll come back right after our break.